Okay, this is tape four, side one, continuing with David Kranz. Gabby Dinman is the interviewer, Mary Harrison taking notes. We're still at Anathem House.
David, you started to tell us that you have another
vignette. This is in my retirement years, wherever I am now. I had hoped to have more time, so I agreed that I'd be president of the Downtown Pittsburgh Rotary this year, which I'm coming to an end at the end of the month of June. And my work with the station, Channel 4, and with the Pittsburgh Radio Group kept me pretty busy in the volunteer work. Then last September, we got into a new project. And for 6 months of this year, we did a program radio called The Great Years. And it starred Hank Stoll, who goes back 30 years ago with us on television, Joe Negri, my good friend and the musician, myself, as the co-hosts, and we had an entourage of Jean Conley, a former woman interviewer on local television, Nellie King, a former sportscaster and pitcher for the Pittsburgh Pirates, Mike Levine, a top show host on radio, and we had special national guests on the show, such as the wine lady from Connecticut. We had Chuck Connor, the actor, interviewed. John Cleese from Monty Python, he was an interview with us by phone. Arnold Stang, just many of the great old people that worked in this business through the years. Hank Stoll today is a voiceover announcer in New York, and he meets many of them as he goes from job to job, and they all agreed to be on the program. We did the show every Sunday morning on WJAS, which was sort of the music of your life type station, and it was the right demographic, because we were not saying, here's information for old people, but we were saying, here's what interests us, and if you're in the same age group, you're going to be interested. And we started to build a little audience. We did the show at WJAS until December, then we moved into a studio, and we got on four different stations. We were on a station in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, Butler, PA, Brownsville, and Pittsburgh. We did the show for another 26 weeks and in the studio, and then sent the tapes out. And we featured, besides the interview of famous people from the past, our regulars would tell stories, either hints, or Nellie would tell great old sports stories dating back to the Roberto Clemente days with the Pirates. Mike Levine would do some historical pieces or interview our good mayor, Sophie Maslow, and these kinds of interviews. We were silly, the three of us, Hank Stoll, Joe Negri, and I. We would do little sketches. We came up with a portion that we called the chronologically gifted. These were for people who got sick of being called senior citizens or golden agers. Were the chronologically gifted, and each Sunday we gave helpful hints to making your life better, and the best way to do it, we decided, was to irritate the young ones. Irritate your children, and you can do this if you're chronologically gifted by driving with your blinker on at all times, that drives you crazy, going slow in the fast lane. Make sure when they come to your house the VCR is blinking 12, they love it when they think you don't know how to fix electronic things. Always keep your house hot. They hate it. Keep turning the thermostat on, and then keep putting more sweaters on. They'll go home real quickly. And little things to irritate them, like call, if they don't call you, call them and say, I think I just had a small heart attack. And they'll say, you better call 911. And you say, well, I don't think it was that bad. Then you drop the phone, and you don't hang it up. They'll enjoy the drive up. So we gave these helpful hints. Well, the show went off after 26 weeks. It's now in the process, and in show business, you never know, of three syndicators. And the best shot I think we have is Al Hamm, H-A-M-M, who originated the Music of Your Life type format for music of the 40s, 50s, older people type music, big bands. It's in his hands, and he's thinking now maybe of chopping up into vignettes to play during the week. But we're trying to negotiate, if he does that, to give us one four-hour or two-hour block so Negri can play and talk about music. And Joe did some great stuff, like Eileen Farrell, the old opera singer. She recorded an album of Johnny Mercer songs. She always wanted to sing standards, and Joe flew to North Carolina and played with her. That was on the show. So at this moment, we think it may come back. But in the meantime, among everything else, we at least got 6 months of tapes that I can listen to in my old age.
Oh, that's great. You mentioned Sophie Maslow. Do you have anything interesting to tell us about her? Our current mayor.
She and I have gone through many dinners and lunches together, and we always laugh. She said, "You here again?" And she says, "I see more of you." My favorite story about her, and I think it's in good taste. This year in February, I invited her to Rotary. For one thing, Gilbert Love, who's a great old writer of this town, the Pittsburgh Press, he writes travel. We wanted to take him, honor him. He's been a member of Rotary for 25 years. So we started a love award, which we plan to give out every Valentine's Day. So we gave him the first love award, and I wrote to Sophie and said, "Would you do a proclamation and come by?" Because Mayor Caligiuri had been an honorary member of the club, and we have women in Rotary now. There's no reason you shouldn't be an honorary member of Rotary. So she came, she gave the award to Gil Love, and then I made her an honorary Rotarian, and she's a member of the club now. And when she stood up, she said, "It's my pleasure," she said, "and when David Kranz asked me to come, I could only say yes to him because he's been real good. He's done a lot of things for a lot of people, and he's been good for a lot of people. But then so is Teo Pectate." And I almost fell off the podium. So yes, I know her very well.
Do you think she works at being a character? Or is she just...
I think she's happy doing it. I think she's very comfortable. I had a group in from out of town, and she did a luncheon for me, and they loved her. They were from every major city, eastern half of the United States. They thought she was great. She likes her little jokes, and she is, I suppose she won't mind me saying this. She had even asked for the name of my son, who's a comedy writer, and she called him, and he wrote her a few things, and he said, "I don't want you to pay me," and she insisted, she said, "I want to come back to you," so she sent him a little check.
Oh, that's wonderful. So, now, do you think her malapropisms were written by someone, or are they natural?
I think maybe that's natural, but she definitely goes into everything. I've heard her use other funny lines. I'm sure she's either come upon herself or somebody's helped her with standing up in front of a large group, and she said, as Henry VIII said to all his wives, "I won't keep you very long." Then she does that, and she said she's good. She said that the other day I did a MC at an open house for the Health Agency Coalition. She was there, and she said, "You know, David Kranz is a self-made man, which relieves God of a lot of responsibility." So she is funny, and she delivers it well.
That's great. Did you know Mayor Caligiuri?
Oh, very well, yeah.
Do you have any remembrances?
Oh, I love it.
Can you stop us for a minute?
Yes.
We're going to have a 2-hour.
Okay, this is Mary Harrison. I'm interviewing David Kranz alone. Gabby Dinman had to, at the last minute, go out of town. This is June 20th. This is tape 4, side 1. We're at the National Council of Jewish Women's building. Actually, Anathan House, and here we are. One of the things I wanted to ask you, David, is about the Pittsburgh rehab. Do you know when it started, or the beginning of the rehab?
I'm going to guess it would be, it was originally called the Home for Crippled Children. And as far as I know, I think it goes back very early 1900s. And I know that my sister's sister-in-law, which is a little weird, her name is Lorraine Ristman, taught there from about, I'd say maybe the late 20s, until she retired.
Do you remember where it was located?
Yes, it was originally on Northumberland, off Shady, but not where it is today. It was on the other side of the street, closer to where the police fire station is. Then they bought the land, and they built that sort of Williamsburg kind of building, and it was still called Home for Crippled Children until about, I'm not sure, it's more than 10, 12 years ago, maybe late 70s, early 80s, because I remember Myron Cope from our station went and emceed the changeover of the name to the Rehabilitation Institute in Pittsburgh. I sometimes get that name mixed up with the Vocational Rehabilitation Center, but that is a different entity.
Do you remember when the first year was that the Pittsburgh Rotary, and would that be the National Rotary, permitted women to be members?
I believe it was about 4 years ago, which would be at this time about 1987, 86, 87, and the Pittsburgh Rotary, that, of which I'm just completing my presidency, we took in about 10 women the first year, and we have a surprising number now, almost 30-some. And
of what number membership?
Of under 300, so we're over the 10%, but we're probably around 12-15%. And keep taking women in, and I must say, as a sidelight, probably wouldn't say this normally, but the predominance of Jewish women have come into the club, and they've been tremendously helpful and very good. Karen Feinstein, who's now head of the Jewish Philanthropies, had been with the United Way. She's been program chairman all year. Marcia Rosenthal, who's the art consultant, she's a member. Mrs. Lieber, the attorney, came in this year. Carol Horowitz from Plantscape. So we have a tremendous number. Sandy Rosen, who's the computer training center. I don't ask me why it happened, because it wasn't a planned thing, but it was interesting that that's what happened.
And what percentage of your Pittsburgh downtown Rotary are Jewish?
Small. On the men's side, I would doubt that it's more than maybe 5%. I would think that's high, but it's small.
Any recollection of anti-Semitism through the years?
No. Uh-uh. They're just anti-fun. They're a nice group. I certainly haven't realized anything, because chances are they asked me to be president and I didn't campaign for it. And they've been very nice with me.
Okay. We ended up last week where you mentioned Mayor Caligiuri.
Yeah, I had the good fortune to do many dinners and lunches with Mayor Caligiuri, because I emceed a lot of things. He was always on hand to lend greetings from the city. But then went a little deeper because he used to be part of a group. He was made part of a group. I don't think he instigated it. They used to have a yearly dinner at Churchill Valley Country Club, where they all seemed to honor each other. And it was masterminded by Guy DeLuca from the Forward Bowling Lanes on Murray Avenue and Forward. But he used to have a thing, and Dick Caligiuri was always part of his group. Because, as I remember, Dick Caligiuri set pins for him while he was going to Auburn Heights in the bowling lanes, so made with friends. And so I got to know him pretty well from doing those dinners. And then the year before he died,
which was when?
Let's see, probably 80. See, Sophie was just reelected last year, and she finished that 2 years. So about 88. 1988. So probably in the fall of 87, they had a big dinner for him at the Hyatt, and they really roasted him, and all his friends did it, and they asked me to be roastmaster, and so I did it, and he was funny with me. He said, "I have dinner with you more than I do with my wife," and he was funny, and it was a good dinner. And a woman who claims that her family comes from the same town in Russia as my family, at least known it, paternal side, Ethel Schmeiser, was Ethel Fine, was her maiden name. She went to school with Dick, and they were good friends. And then she and Jeannie Caligiuri had a business on Shady Side, so she was on the bill too, and she was very funny. And but he was nice. And
how old was he when he died?
About 55 or 56.
Could you mention the disease that he died of?
Amyloidosis. It is a disease of people from the Mediterranean area that is of unknown origin and unknown cause. And the Trullio, the mayor of Erie, just died of the same thing, both of Italian heritage. But Dick Caligiuri always amazed me, because he was he became very well educated on his own. He really didn't have a tremendous formal education. Came up the rough way, and he went to into the city parks department, and from there he just moved up through council and so forth. But when he became a mayor, he became a very good mayor, because he had very distinct ideas of what he wanted to accomplish, and not since David L. Lawrence was mayor of the city was anybody ever able to pull together the Democratic Party to the corporate community and have equal respect and accomplish things. That's why the first Renaissance was David Lawrence's, along with Arthur Van Buskirk and the Mellon family, and the second one was Richard Caligiuri and the corporate community, because they respected him. And could have kept him as mayor probably forever. I mean, I think he could have kept winning as long as he wanted to run. It's a shame that he died so young, because he was really doing good things for the community.
Did he start the Pittsburgh Marathon?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it came under his banner, yeah. And many of the things, many of the special events that the city had through the city parks department, Louise Brown, who is now the acting head president of Chatham College, he gave Louise a lot of support in the regatta, the vintage car race, the 4th of July festivities, the Labor Day activities. And they were using the Point State Park on a regular basis with free entertainment for the community. He was a big champion of that, and he'd show up at everything and did it. But beyond that, he administered, too. I mean, he wasn't a sort of facade for that office. He was really a very operative-type man. I liked him, and as the years have gone on since his death, I've done a lot of work with Gene Caligiuri, his wife, through the Salvation Army, through this project Bundle Up that Channel 4 has done. And she's a lovely woman. She is a very, very pleasant person and a very devoted person. And her kids are great, too.
Do you think that Mayor Maslov is a good mayor?
Yes, I really think, I think she has been a good mayor in a different way. She's grassroots. She knows the political system like no one knows it. She went right through from the ward level all the way up. So she does know her way around. She knows who to contact, what to contact. I don't think, from an operations viewpoint, she's probably as smooth as somebody like Caligiuri was, but she does have good people around her, and they do take good care of the office, and they take good care of her, and they all like her. And when you take her out into the public, she's a bit of a character, but I'll tell you something, no one walks away and says, I hate that woman. They all say, the worst they'll ever say about her, she's different, or she's a good, but she's lovable. You know, I like Sophie. I think she's great.
You mentioned Gilbert Love, Gilbert Love Award,
yeah.
And I know he was a very fine writer. It was the Pittsburgh Press?
Pittsburgh Press. He wrote a daily column for many, many years, and now at the age of 84, and he lives in a retirement community home somewhere in Mount Lebanon, I'm not sure which one, because his wife passed away a couple of years ago. She was Peg Love. He always wrote about her, and then she had a travel agency. But in his latter years, he was the travel editor. Automobile and travel editor, and he wrote columns. Now he's in his, you know, close to mid-80s. He still writes a Sunday column for the Pittsburgh Press every week. He still travels. He goes to places, gives you tips on where to go. He's a wonderful man. He's been a member of the Pittsburgh Rotary Club for something like 24, 25 years, and he's a lovely man. So we named an award after him, and he received the first one through the good auspices of the mayor presenting it to him. And I think we're going to do it as a yearly thing, give somebody an award.
Art Rooney.
Well, Art Rooney is a wonderful man. He made everybody feel special. He used to write me little notes, and I used to cherish every little note, and I still do.
First of all, we have to say who Art Rooney is.
Well, Art Rooney was the president and founder of the Pittsburgh Steeler football team, which he bought in 1933 for about, $3,500 with money he won at the racetrack that afternoon. In his latter years, Art Rooney and his son Dan is now president of the club. Regaled him and looked up to him and said wonderful things, like he was a saint. But I will tell you something, he was not always a saint. He was mixed up in politics in the early years. He was a gambler. He was a fight promoter. But somehow, he loved everyone and everyone loved him. He lived in the same house his entire life in the North Side. He walked to the stadium every day. And And when the kids were growing up, I would sit at dinner for the whole family, and he wasn't home very much. Okay, he was on the road a lot. But he was just a kind of man that you do something. The first time it ever happened to me, I emceed a dinner for the Diabetes Association, and Dan Rooney and his wife, Pat, had a child. I think maybe they have two children with juvenile diabetes. And so they you know, helped the organization tremendously. And they got the Steeler players to be there over several years, did these dinners. And when it was over, next day or so, I got in the mail a little card. And it was, it said more or less, I hate to go to dinners. I try to avoid them. I had to go to this one. And you were very good. So you actually made me laugh. Not many people do it. He said, you're to be commended. Let me know when you're going to MC again, and I'll be there. And it's signed, Art Rooney. And I thought, gee, what a thrill. And then he'd see me periodically, and he'd say, you're still working those dinners for free? I said, yeah. He says, you give me your contract, I'll get you $5,000. He used to always do this. So I found out after he died that he wrote to everyone. I mean, I always took it so personally, and everyone did. And there's nothing wrong with it. I don't mean it. But when he met you, or you said something to him, he would go back to the office the next day and write you a little note on his little card with his name on it. And I cherish him. I am afraid. And my great story about Art Rooney is, it was like about 1980. And I used to do these dinners that I had mentioned earlier in Washington for the Pennsylvania broadcasters in front of the Pennsylvania congressional delegation. And we were going to honor Art Rooney as a native Pennsylvanian who had made great contributions to the entertainment, sports, communications field. And he agreed to do it through Ed Kiley, who was like his old PR man who's still around. And we got him all set. And then the man who was the vice president, general manager of Channel 11 here was a man named Len Swanson. He had been at a breakfast, a prayer breakfast or something at the White House with Jimmy Carter, and he had ended up sitting next to Judge Sirica from the Watergate fame, and they got to talk, and he's from Pittsburgh, and Sirica says, how's my old friend Art Rooney? And Len Swanson said, fine. He said, yeah, he's a wonderful man. And Len Swanson said, as a matter of fact, the Pennsylvania broadcasters are going to be honoring him down here in a month or so. And Judge Sirica said, could I go to the dinner? So I got a call from Swanson. He said, you're to call Judge Sirica's office and say that, you know, you're invited, you'll make the arrangements. I said, sure. So I called his secretary, and I told her who I was. And she said, oh, the judge said if you call, he wants to talk with you. So Judge Sirica gets on the phone, and he said, I want to come to the... I said, fine, you be our guest. May I bring my wife? Yes, it's a black tie. I said, no. And he said, well, how'll I get my ticket? I said, well, just come to the Washington Hilton, and I'll leave it at the table for you. Well, will you look out for me? I said, I'll watch for you. I'll take care of you. He said, it'd be great to see Art. Don't tell him I'm coming. Be surprised. I said, fine. So I warned everyone not to say anything to Rooney, the Judge Sirica of Watergate fame at that point was going to be there. I looked for him. I suddenly realized he was coming down the hall. I recognized him from television. But he was alone. He said his wife wasn't feeling well. He came alone. He said, is Art here? I said, yes. And I'm walking in the door with him to like a cocktail party. And I said, well, Judge, how long has it been since you've seen Art Rooney? And he said, let's see. He said, this is in 1980. And he said, I spent an afternoon with him at Hialeah Racetrack in November 1926. And I said, do you mean say you haven't seen him for 54 years? And he said, that's right. I said, have you been in touch with him? He said, no, but I followed his career. I said, let's stop and get a drink. And I said, go tell Art Rooney. It's Judge Sirica I'm bringing over. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is the man. And he handled the Watergate. Who knows what happened for you? That's a true story.
And were you there when they finally saw each other?
Yeah. And then Art Rooney was fine because somebody had tipped him that he was there. And he said, he knew him from television too. And he said, yeah, good to see you. How you been doing? He said, yeah. And they talked for a while. I have pictures with him somewhere, I think, of the two of them. It was just unbelievable. This man would think you hadn't seen anybody in 54 years, and he would be thrilled to see you like an old friend.
That's funny.
Mike Levine.
Well, Mike Levine, I first knew him years ago when I came back to Pittsburgh to work at the Playhouse because he was a reporter at the now defunct Pittsburgh Sun-Telegraph, which was owned by the Hearst Corporation, which later owned all the radio and television stations I worked for. But he was there, and when the paper folded about 1961, he went to KDKA radio as a on-the-spot reporter, which was sort of a new technique. Now, he would go from fire to fire or wherever there was a special event and do live coverage. They used to say, Reach Gordon, the morning disc jockey on KDKA, used to say, Mike Levine and his talking machine, it was what it was. But he did, and he made a name for himself doing that. And after working here for a great number of years, he had an offer in Florida, and he and his wife, Bernice, went to Florida, where he worked for many years, and, oh, maybe 8 to 10 years ago, he decided to go back to Pittsburgh. And they took him back to KDK, and he worked there until a couple of years ago, which, when he was near retirement age, I think he was upset that his contract wasn't renewed. And then we did a radio show this year, which I talked about earlier, called The Great Years, and he did an interview each week for us with people like Sophie Maslow, the mayor, older people in the community that have achieved some status and are still working. And today, he's still active by doing a daily talk show on WASP in Brownsville, Pennsylvania. So he's still around.
What do you think of him?
I think he's a very good interviewer, hard-hitting interviewer. I don't think he's the smoothest interviewer I've ever heard, but he had a kind of Pittsburgh appeal that I think was really right for here. He probably asked the questions that people wanted to hear, but he wasn't Ted Koppel.
All right, we've talked about Butler Street. We started out informally this morning, and I know that the Svetik family.
Svetik's had a grocery store in the corner of the same block where my parents had the jewelry store and where I grew up. Svetik's were a big family, and one of them, Matt Svetik, was very famous for being a undercover agent for the FBI, and he was in a communist cell. I don't know if you remember. It was a television series based on his life. I was a spy,
communist
for the FBI. And
remember the actor that played him?
Yes. I'm going to say Filbert. I can't remember.
Yes.
Wasn't it? I don't know. I think Roger Filbert. But anyway, they did that series, and one of the Svetiks, the children, his nephew and Jack Svetik, who had the grocery store, their son, I think Jack Jr., has been the chief engineer of KDKA television all these years. Now, he may have retired recently, but he was there a couple of years ago. So the family, they were always around C-V-E-T-I-C, Svetik, and the I-C's were the Croatians, and the E-C's were the Serbians. So anybody that had the IC names were Croatian. In the Lawrenceville area, there was a tremendous population of Croatians. So.
Do you have any idea, personal knowledge of how it affected the family to know that, I mean...
About the, yeah, they had problems. They did, because when it was a long time until he was exposed as being a double agent, I guess you'd call it. Yeah, I think they took it on the chin for a time, but... There was a kind of, I don't think there was hatred in that area. People always seemed to understand trouble, and people were in trouble, and it was a kind of very ethnic thing, and there was always a lot of, I think when there's ethnicity, there's a lot of forgiveness. It's emotional. You can get mad quickly, and you can get happy quickly, and I think that's the kind of reaction. And nobody said, I'm never going to go in that store again.
And you mentioned in the very beginning that there was anti-Semitism in the community.
Yeah.
But did you feel that you were a part of that community? Would you want to live there again?
No. No, I think...
Were you part of... Do you feel that you were included in part of this ethnicity, or was...
No. The best I did was become friends with other Jewish kids in the area. Nathan Shore, they had a store a couple blocks away, and I still see him once in a while. Harry Weiss was a childhood friend of mine, the Denmarks. These were people that were Jewish in the area and more or less played with them. Not to say that I didn't ever go out and throw a football with other kids, but there was a sort of a restraint there, and there was a lot of the ethnic thing pretty much stayed to themselves. I mean, I do think the Croatians stayed to themselves, the Poles stayed to themselves, the Irish stayed to themselves,
okay.
And I think that existed. But no, you know, they call you names once in a while. Kids would. I don't think they necessarily knew what they were doing, but, you know, it would have come from a family, probably. There was only one, I think I mentioned, there was only one black family in the whole area named Barry, and they had a kid in every class, it seemed, and they were great, and I was friends with Philip. You know, they call you names, and my parents always just said to me, you know, walk away, don't make an issue out of it, just...
Do you think that the Jewish kids ever sort of gang up and then call the other ethnic groups?
No.
And do you feel... Okay, so you don't feel... You feel that the other ethnic groups, were I interviewing one of them, would feel that there was animosity against them?
Toward
of their little groups, or...?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't think so. I don't know if it's the kind of thing that children go through if you're not... If you're not predominant in the area, you know, they would jump each other, you know, call somebody a hunky.
That's what I meant, okay.
Fall off, yes, they'd do that, you know. Yeah, I think that happened. But they would say names like, a name that I never, don't even hear anymore. You know the name Sheenie?
But that's for the Irish.